supporting WHYY Penn Medicine, helping to find new cures for cancer. With life-saving clinical trials and advanced surgical techniques, Penn Medicine is offering more hope for patients everywhere. Learn more at PennMedicine.org/cancer. Penn Medicine, what's next?
I'm Dave Heller, and this is NewsWorks Tonight. The debate over how to change the nation's healthcare system is dividing the Republican Party. So far, the conservative wing seems to be winning the most concessions. WHYY correspondent Matt Laszlo reports on whether more moderate Northeastern Republicans are losing clout in this Congress.
Today, President Trump hosted a group of conservatives at the White House, and he's reported to have given them what they want: big changes to Medicaid. Lawmakers report the GOP health care legislation will now turn Medicaid into a block grant program run by states, and it will allow states to force recipients to get jobs before they get free health care. Those are pretty major concessions to the conservative wing of the party. Central Pennsylvania Republican Congressman Scott Perry is a part of the Tea Party-aligned House Freedom Caucus. While his group has the ear of the president, he says it doesn't always seem that way.
Look, we don't feel all that powerful, obviously. We're a lot of times, unfortunately, we're treated like pariahs around here. Let's face it. I mean, you wish it wouldn't have to be that way, but it kind of is that way. I mean, everybody's very kind and all that stuff, but let's face it. They're not thrilled with some of the positions that we take.
So have moderate Republicans from the Northeast lost clout as the party moved further to the right? Congressman Ryan Costello, who represents a district west of Philadelphia, says he doesn't think so.
No, because I think we have our own way of evaluating things and making our points heard, and it's not necessarily through the press the way that they do it.
But the health care debate is testing the Republican Party, and that could reveal which direction the GOP goes in the near future when it comes to items like funding for Amtrak, after-school programs, and even the environment. South Jersey Republican Congressman Tom MacArthur says the good news is that moderates and the Tea Party wing of the GOP share the same goal.
These are different tribes of the same family.
On the health care bill, while the White House has made promises to the far right, it still hasn't locked in the support of moderates like MacArthur. He's lobbying to keep his state's Medicaid expansion in place for the next 3 years. But he also says the bill needs to do more to protect the poor and people in their 60s who aren't old enough for Medicare. While surrounded by a flock of reporters with microphones and notebooks in tow, MacArthur disputed that conservatives are winning all the concessions.
No, I'm not worried about that because I'm in the discussions and I know all the back and forth. And you can't, you know, I know you guys believe in the press, but you can't read everything you see in the press, believe it or not.
Then there's Leonard Lance, another New Jersey Republican.
I don't like the bill in its current form. I do not like the bill in its current form.
The Congressional Budget Office dropped a bombshell on Republicans this week with an estimate that as many as 24 million people could lose health insurance under the GOP plan. In New Jersey, many people getting assistance from the government for insurance would also have to pay almost $1,300 more under the plan, according to the Center for Budget and Policy Priorities. While conservatives say the CBO score doesn't matter, Lance says he needs to be reassured the plan covers more people.
I would like to see a CBO score that is significantly different from the CBO score that was released earlier this week, and I don't know whether that's possible.
In Pennsylvania, on average, people getting tax credits instead of direct subsidies from the government would have to pay nearly $2,200 more for insurance. In Delaware, they'd have to pay more than $2,300. Republican Charlie Dent from the Lehigh Valley is co-chair of a group of moderates known as the Tuesday Group. Dent says the more concessions party leaders make to the conservative wing of the party, the harder it is for them to shore up support from the moderate wing.
They have a very difficult needle to thread here. You know, any movement in one direction can cost votes from the other side. I think that's what they're grappling with. But a lot of us are looking at this issue right now in terms of the Senate. You're saying, what in this bill is going to survive the Senate and what is not? And I think a lot of us would prefer to, get a better sense of where the Senate is prior to the launch from the House. I mean, a lot of members here don't want to walk the plank for a bill that may not ever be passed by the Senate.
For now, party leaders seem to be taking the concerns of the far right wing of the party more seriously than the concerns of moderates. But as they put the health care bill up for a vote next week, moderate lawmakers from our region are hoping to play a larger role. For WHYY News, I'm Matt Laszlo in Washington.
The flame is burning a little less brightly for the iconic Zippo lighter. Manufactured since 1933 in Bradford, Pennsylvania, the company sent out pink slips this month to 38 of its 500-plus workers. Joining me to shed light is Wharton Professor of Management Emeritus Marshall Meyer. Professor Meyer, thanks for joining us on Newsworks Tonight.
And thank you. I'm glad to be here.
One of your research interests is management in China. And let's quickly go overseas, because China plays a big role in what seems to be happening with Zippo.
I agree with that. It appears that they made a bet on China, and it's not worked out as they planned.
Well, part of that bet was sensible, because smoking continues to decline here in the States, but less so in China, apparently.
I think so. The Chinese have begun to wonder about the medical costs, the social costs of smoking, but still smoking is much, much more common there than here.
Are Chinese deterred by the potential price of a Zippo lighter, which can apparently range from $15 to well over $10,000?
Well, it's an expensive item because obviously other cigarette lighters, domestic cigarette lighters, cost a heck of a lot less, but it's also a prestige item. And so for a while, there was a substantial market for Zippo lighters in China.
The CEO of Zippo says the layoffs were due in large measure to a glut of inventory.
Technically, I'm sure that's correct. They piled up too much inventory, or their distributor piled up too much inventory in China or in Hong Kong. But of course, what's the cause of that? And it's either optimistic projections or decline of sales. We don't know which.
Well, as you cite the distributor, now let's invoke the terms gray market versus black market.
A gray market in goods is very simple. It's a market created when a product intended for sale in one market is shipped to and sold in another market. Often the term is transshipment. Goes to one market and then sent back, for example, to the U.S., to another part of Asia.
Unbeknownst to the original manufacturer, in this case Zippo?
Unauthorized by them. Eventually they get knowledge of it, and as they have in this case.
It's not technically illegal.
As far as I know, it's not. I don't know what agreements the distributor has with Zippo, but the law doesn't prohibit it at all. It's quite common, in fact.
Professor, is Zippo a cautionary tale for other American concerns dealing with China?
I think so. It's a relatively small company. It found the domestic market declining. It found what it thought was a ready market in China, given high rates of consumption of tobacco. Entered the Chinese market and, in fact, got very optimistic there, expanded into a Zippo-branded clothing line. I don't think we've seen that in the U.S., but a number of things have happened in China, and it appears that their business in China has suffered as a consequence. There's been, of course, the anti-corruption drive, so there's a little less conspicuous consumption. There's some incipient anti-Americanism. There are probably some counterfeits. And of course, the Chinese economy is not growing at the same rate it was, though most agree household consumption remains on the upward side, although not as rapidly as before. So all these things are happening. Their business slows down unexpectedly. Inventory that had accumulated either in China or in Hong Kong for distribution in China gets diverted elsewhere, maybe back to the U.S. Price erosion results. That's what a gray market does. So the lesson, very succinctly, is don't bet the farm on China. Lots of things we don't know about China, lots of things we don't understand. And as a consequence, bets made there have to be taken with a sense of the risks involved, priced accordingly. And the old rule that holds in all investments, diversify, 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 also holds for China. I think that's the lesson that you take away. Don't bet the farm on China.
Though given the extensive list of variables you just cited, it's even a cautionary tale for larger concerns, not just small and mid-sized companies.
I would think so. There have been some remarkable success stories in China. For example, General Motors has done remarkably well in China. On the other hand, if you look at reports coming out of AmCham, American Chamber of Commerce, whether in Beijing, Shanghai, even Hong Kong, the challenges in China seem to have increased. And so businesses of all sizes and in all industries, I think, would be well served by taking a look at these reports.
Professor, thanks so much for joining us on Newsworks Tonight to shed light.
And thank you very much for the opportunity to speak with you.
Wharton Professor of Management Emeritus Marshall Meyer. A federal judge in Philadelphia recently ruled that the FBI can compel Google to turn over emails belonging to an American but stored on servers overseas. Google refused, and as WHYY's Alan Yu reports, it's not clear how the courts will ultimately rule.
Whether you use Gmail or Microsoft Outlook or something else, your emails may be stored in servers outside the U.S. But can the U.S. government use a warrant to force Google to retrieve those emails for federal agents? A federal judge in Philadelphia said yes, but Google is refusing. That decision goes against a higher court ruling in New York that said Microsoft did not have to pass along emails stored in Ireland. Christopher Yu, no relation, is a law professor at the University of Pennsylvania. He says this can go one of two ways.
Either the Philadelphia-based federal courts will come to the same conclusion as the New York-based federal courts, in which case we'll have a unanimous set of law and it'll be no trouble. It's also possible that the Philadelphia-based courts will come to the opposite conclusion, in which case it's quite likely the Supreme Court will take the case and decide the issue itself.
Apple, Microsoft, Amazon, and Cisco have filed a brief supporting Google. Alan Yu, WHYY.
Planet Earth last year reached its highest average temperature since records were first kept in 1880. Yet, the Trump administration budget proposal laid out this week eliminates funding for climate change research as part of 31% overall cuts to the Environmental Protection Agency. Let's take up public perceptions around global warming with Frank Newport, editor-in-chief at the Gallup Poll. Hi, Frank.
Hello, Dave.
Frank, EPA Chief Scott Pruitt says he doesn't agree that human activity is a primary contributor to global warming. Does that argument resonate with the public at large?
It does not. And this has been a change. There was a point not too long ago, back in about 2010, when about as many Americans said that global warming was a result of natural causes as human activity, which was interesting. That was caused by a lot of Republicans who were moving to the natural versus the human side of the equation. But over the last 2 years, the American public has moved clearly in the direction of saying that it is a function of human activities. And right now, 68% say that global warming is caused by human activity rather than by natural causes, which means two-thirds of the American public would contradict the assumption of EPA Chief Pruitt.
Of course, in the short term, Americans are enjoying lower energy costs, in part due to the ascendancy of fracking. Plenty of it here in Pennsylvania. How is that assessed?
It's a political issue. Overall, 35% of Americans say they favor, and let me read you the exact wording that we use, hydraulic fracturing or fracking as a means of increasing the production of natural gas and oil in the U.S. That's how we phrase it to the public. 35% favor. 53% opposed, 12% say they don't have an opinion. That's about where it's been over the last several years, but it is political. Over half of Republicans say they favor fracking. Only 22% of Democrats say they favor fracking. So this issue of where this energy is coming from is filtered through a partisan lens.
Just about every week we hear the extent to which public perceptions are divided based on politics or partisanship. I understand there is a deeper dive that Gallup is taking in terms of trying to figure out who likes and who doesn't like the Trump administration.
That's right. And a lot of it, of course, comes back to politics. But we took your partisan affiliation and your ideology, that is, are you conservative or liberal, out of the equation. And then we said, all right, let's look at a large number of interviews we've conducted since January the 20th, when Trump took office, at his approval rating, and see what makes a difference. And maybe not shockingly, the biggest differences are race, gender, and education when you look at demographics. And some of these differences are huge. Overall, if you look at white males who have not graduated from college, 67% approve of Donald Trump. And if you go down to the other end of the spectrum, you look at non-white females who either graduated or didn't graduate from college, doesn't seem to make much difference there. It's 14 and 15% who approve. So you see these huge differences when you put combinations of race, education, and gender together in how Trump is evaluated.
Is age another primary variable?
It is. Clearly, young people, and we saw this, of course, in the campaign last year, young people are significantly more positive about Trump than old people. If you're 65 and over and listening to this right now, in general, regardless of your other demographic characteristics, 65 plus is 50% approve of Donald Trump, and that's quite a bit above the average of about 42% overall for Donald Trump. If you're 18 to 29, approval's at 31%.
As you cited race, what are perceptions about race relations?
We have seen a significant change this year when we updated it, and we ask Americans, how much do you worry about a large number of things? And one of those is race relations. We just use those two words, race relations, and we're looking at the percent who say they worry about race relations a great deal, and that's gone up significantly over the last 3 years. For a number of years, over the last decade, decade and a half, only 13, 15, 20% of Americans said they worried a great deal about race relations. Now, this year, that's up to 42%, and it was 35% last year. So there's this steep upward curve in worry about race relations. We don't ask Americans why. Our assumption is a lot of that has to do with the incidents involving black and white interactions between police and black males and other situations like that that have so dominated the news.
Thanks, Frank.
You bet, Dave.
Frank Newport, editor-in-chief at the Gallup Poll. He joins us each week at this time on Newsworks Tonight. This weekend, a Philadelphia performance troupe will dance to the radio. A trio of dancers will perform a choreographed work to whatever happens to be broadcasting at the time. From WHYY's Arts and Culture Desk, Peter Krimen reports that they've chosen to dance to NPR.
While many people listen to public radio, few dance to it. I mean, I don't dance to WHYY, and I work here.
This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. My guest, Ella
choreographer
Fartina,
Meredith Stapleton, is like a lot of people in that she is a distracted listener. She tends to listen to the radio while she's doing something else, like cooking or driving a car. Her 15-minute piece called Refract, Reflect, Absorb forces her dancers to go through prescribed movements while simultaneously listening to sounds they have never heard before. All the time, they're making emotional and intellectual adjustments as they go.
My hope is that the audience can realize that they are doing the same thing as they are watching, that they are also processing and embodying this new information. It kind of stirs up questions about the way we take in any kind of media.
The dance, to be performed at the Iron Factory in Kensington, will be programmed alongside other pieces, one of which is a response to the election of President Donald Trump. Stapleton says that her dance about media might appear to be political, but only by proxy.
You know, how we interpret media is kind of a hot topic right now. I think that this piece allows me to explore that, not necessarily with direct content, but in just thinking about how do we listen and share stories.
According to WHYY's weekend schedule, Stapleton's dancers will be performing two, A Prairie Home Companion, on Saturday evening, and on Sunday evening, Fresh Air Weekend. I'm Peter Crimmins, WHYY News.
And finally this evening, last Friday on Newsworks Tonight, we reported on how President Donald Trump's travel ban was affecting the annual match of international doctors with residencies in the United States.
Yeah, it becomes like double stress.
That's Amin Rabi'i. He grew up and went to medical school in Iran and has been in Philadelphia as a postdoctoral researcher. Well, today marked an important day for him in that process. This is Match Day, when tens of thousands of aspiring doctors get word about where they'll work as residents. We checked in with Rabi'i again.
Actually, I got the email of where I did match.
He matched, and he won't be going far. He'll be at Drexel Hahnemann's neurology program.
I really feel excited and I can't wait for start my residency here in the States in Philly.
But he does know of Iranian friends who weren't so lucky. Rabi'i says the news also comes with some sadness. Though the travel ban has been put on hold by the courts, even without that, securing timely travel visas to and from Iran is tricky, so he's not sure when he'll be able to visit family next and says he's prepared to wait years. That's all for tonight's show. Newsworks Tonight is produced by Shai Ben-Yaakov, Kimberly Haas, Ty Johnson, and Brett Rader. Our news director is Eugene Son. John Musoni is Assistant Vice President for News Operations. At the helm this week, Diana Martinez, Adam Staniszewski, and Charlie Kyer. Sandra Clark is Vice President of News and Civic Dialogue. Thanks for joining us and have a great weekend. I'm Dave Heller for Newsworks Tonight.